DW Spotlight on Europe.
Hello, this is Spotlight on Europe, a program that brings you latest happenings on this continent. I am Zipporah Nyambura in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, French President Emmanuel Macron seeks to calm the waters after days of protests over hiked fuel prices.
This isn't what we're asking for. What we want is for him to lower these taxes, so it won't be such a struggle for us to make ends meet. So we won't have to work our fingers to the bone for next to nothing.
In Netherlands... Protests over the much-celebrated Christmas character Black Pete. Opponents say it's racist, but those who support it see it differently.
It's not about black. I can't even believe what's happening right now.
We will also take you to Russia, where tensions between Ukraine and Russia escalate after a military crisis of the Crimea Peninsula. We have these and much more. Stay tuned. We start off with the news in brief. As we all know, Brexit has largely dominated the headlines this week after the United Kingdom and the European Union finalised their divorce deal. The UK government has admitted that it will be economically worse off outside the EU. There are also fears Britain could leave the EU with a no agreement, a so-called no-deal Brexit, since many critics are not happy with the deal. Theresa May struck with the Brussels. Helen Sini has the details in this roundup of European news.
British Prime Minister Theresa May has refused to rule out Britain leaving the EU without a deal. Parliament is due to vote on the divorce deal that her government has struck with the EU on December the 11th. Lawmakers from all sides are vowing to reject it. The Bank of England has issued a warning that leaving the bloc without a deal could trigger a financial crisis for the UK economy. Governor Mark Carney said that would cause the pound to plunge, GDP to fall, inflation to rise, and house prices to drop. Commentators accused him of fear-mongering and criticised him for only outlining the worst-case scenario without a balancing, more positive outcome. Italy has become the latest European country to signal it won't be endorsing the UN Global Compact on Migration. It's due to be signed in Morocco next month. Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte said Italy would not be attending the meeting because Parliament still had to debate the issue, but he said that Italy would not back the pact. Meanwhile, his government has formally adopted a tough anti-migrant and security bill. The new legislation will make it easier to expel migrants and limit residency permits. And it allows migrants to be stripped of their citizenship if convicted of terrorism. The United Arab Emirates has pardoned and released a British academic who was sentenced to life in prison after being convicted of spying. An Abu Dhabi court had handed down the sentence last week. Matthew Hedges, a PhD student, was arrested at Dubai International Airport in May after a two-week research visit in the UAE. His detention sparked a diplomatic dispute between the UAE and Britain. The UK government denied Hedges was a British spy. News of his release came after Emirati officials released a video which showed Hedges purportedly saying that he was a captain in MI6, Britain's foreign intelligence agency. In the video, he said he approached sources using a cover as a doctoral student. Germany's interior minister said on Wednesday that Muslims belong to Germany. Horst Seehofer was speaking at the German Islam conference in Berlin. He said Muslims had the same rights and duties as all citizens of the country, adding there was no reasonable doubt about that. Seehofer caused controversy in March when he said that Islam didn't belong in Germany and that the country had been shaped by Christianity. The German Islam Conference, which was first launched in 2006, brings together German Muslims and federal and state officials. A former Greek finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis, is to stand in the European elections next year, and he'll be representing Germany, a country he frequently locked horns with during Greece's debt crisis. Varoufakis opposed the deep austerity measures imposed by Brussels, Berlin and international creditors. Announcing his bid, Varoufakis said it was time for a European spring. He accepted the nomination on behalf of the Democracy in Europe movement 2025, which he launched in 2016. Varoufakis is not a German citizen, but says he meets the requirement to stand as a candidate in Germany because he has a residential address in the country. And finally, an investigation has been launched after a soccer club in Ireland falsely claimed a player had been killed in a car crash. Ballybrack FC, who play in the Leinster Senior League, claimed that the player died on the way home from training, according to the Irish Independent. Players in the league observed a minute's silence and wore black armbands in support of the man's family last weekend. The team even called off a match as a mark of respect. The club issued a statement saying there had been a gross error of judgment.
Helen Sini with that news roundup. Elsewhere, tensions between Russia and Ukraine continue to escalate after Ukraine on Friday barred Russian males between the ages of 16 and 60 from traveling to the country. President Petro Poroshenko said travel for Russian men will be limited, except in humanitarian cases. The long simmering conflict bubbled over last Sunday following a military crisis of the Crimea Peninsula when Russia seized three Ukrainian Navy vessels and sailors claiming they had entered its territorial waters. My colleague Keith Walker speaks with DW's Kyiv reporter David Sten and starts by asking him if this is the most dangerous situation we have seen in this conflict since Russia annexed Crimea back in 2014.
Well, it's difficult to say because we've seen a lot of dangerous situations, but it's obviously one of them. What exactly, how it's going to play out is remains to be seen. But as you say, it all started with Russia's annexation of Crimea. And if you remember, President Vladimir Putin later on admitted that there were, in fact, Russian troops involved in that. So that was the first direct confrontation between Russian and Ukrainian forces. And then obviously we've also had the ongoing conflict in eastern Ukraine. There as well, it appeared to be Russian forces. This has been determined by independent investigative groups as well as Western journalists. But it's never come to something quite as open as what we've seen in the Azov Sea. And I guess what the most worrying thing about it, aside from the fact that the Ukrainians say, obviously, that Russia is preparing a full-scale invasion, the most worrying thing at the moment is that the diplomatic efforts seem to be going nowhere.
Germany's foreign minister has said that Germany could mediate between Ukraine and Russia in this ongoing crisis. But some critics in Germany are calling on Berlin to help Kyiv militarily. I mean, how is that going to play out?
Well, obviously, Germany has to tread very carefully. The Ukrainians will welcome any military assistance. In fact, they're calling for, just recently, they called for NATO ships to be sent to the Azov Sea. And military officials are calling for the Bosphorus Straits to be cut off to Russian transport. I think we're a long way from that. The Germans obviously have been playing a very key role since the conflict first started. They're part of the Normandy 4 talks, that's with France and Russia and Ukraine. They're also involved in the Minsk process. And it also, Chancellor Merkel is a trusted figure among the Ukrainians. They say that she understands the situation. She also has a long-standing and very direct relationship with President Vladimir Putin. Mm-hmm. So one, I guess you could say that there's hope that the Germans could do something. But the question really is, what in particular?
Let's go back to Vladimir Putin, who says that Petro Poroshenko, who is up for re-election, he's just trying to boost his popularity ratings before next year's elections. And he is doing pretty poorly in the polls. Is there a sense in Ukraine that he's playing some kind of a risky game to stay in power?
Well, yeah, some of Poroshenko's critics accuse him of using, if not provoking it, as President Putin says, at least using the situation. He is very low in the polls at the moment. One recent poll put him at third place behind Yulia Tymoshenko, the former prime minister, and a comedian. Another poll has him in, I believe, even lower. But also at the same time, there's a recognition that this is an extraordinary situation. And I think we saw that in this acknowledgement in the vote in parliament. The criticism of President Poroshenko was very sharp. Deputies were against introducing the martial law for 60 days. They didn't want it for the entire country. And they also managed to get a commitment from the government that the presidential elections will go ahead as planned at the end of March, because there was fear that there was going to be martial law, that these could be postponed. But at the same time, the deputies voted overwhelmingly for the introduction of the martial law. It was by a 50-vote margin. So on one hand, you have the sense that Poroshenko is going to use it in some capacity, maybe to a lesser or to a greater degree. But at the same time, that the threat from Russia is real and that he's not making this up.
And how do ordinary Ukrainians see what's going on?
Well, I can say they can, with great trepidation. Among my Ukrainian acquaintances and friends, there is just a question, you know, is this really the great threat? Ukrainians have been dealing with this conflict for 5 years now, and we have heard that Russia could be invading, that there could be an escalation. It hasn't happened yet. It doesn't mean that there isn't a threat, but Ukrainians are hoping that this one will also pass, and you know, as even though the war is horrible, it won't get any worse.
DW's reporter in Kiev, David Sten, talking to my colleague Keith Walker. It's now a few weeks to go till Christmas. And in the Netherlands at this time of the year, that means protest and debate about a character called Black Piet. That is a name given to the helpers who accompany the Dutch version of Santa Claus. People often daub their faces with black paint when they dress up to play the character. But many believe the character promotes racist stereotypes. There have been violent confrontations over the issue, and it's sparked a debate in Parliament. Stefan Bos reports from the Netherlands.
Sinterklaas, the white, bearded, red-robed Dutch version of Saint Nicholas, is in trouble. Riding a white horse, he passes angry crowds during a live televised parade in Zaanstad, northwest of Amsterdam.
No more black face!
No more black face!
Minutes earlier, he and his Black Piet helpers were welcomed by the local mayor. According to Dutch tradition, they've arrived from Spain to prepare for St. Nicholas Day on December 5th. That's when well-behaved children will receive presents. But these protesters are angry that St. Nicholas uses Black Piet as helpers. They claim the character symbolizes the country's colonial past and slavery. The Black Piets are usually white people dressed up with blackened faces, red lips and Afro wigs. My skin, my hair is no costume, protesters shout. But supporters of Black Piet say he's just an innocent, traditional character. Some even argue he's black from climbing down chimneys to deliver presents. As police here in Zaanstad separate the two sides, a mother tries to comfort her tearful child. She says the protesters should be ashamed of themselves, and then adds,
"It's not about black. I can't even believe what's happening right now.
But anti-Black Pete protesters hold their ground.
We're here because we believe that the character of Black Pete is racist. And we want to change that, so that it'll be a party for everyone.
This protest was tense, but ended peacefully. But other parades across the Netherlands have been interrupted by violent confrontations. In Leeuwarden, police had to separate the two groups to prevent violence while security forces were attacked. There were similar scenes in Groningen, and in Rotterdam, several people were arrested after clashes. And in The Hague, riot police had to escort protesters to the city's main railway station. Amid the turmoil, Prime Minister Mark Rutte appealed for calm.
Ja, voorzitter, daar sta ik voor. En tegelijkertijd is het aan mensen zelf om te beslissen of ze er ook gebruik van maken.
I defend the right to demonstrate, and it's up to the people to decide whether or not they want to use that right. And I believe a civilized discussion about this issue can take place any time of year, not just during the St. Nicholas season. I would say, please don't do it while the children are enjoying the St. Nicholas feast.
But some members of parliament wondered whether the Prime Minister was limiting freedom of expression in this tolerant country. Maarten Groothuizen is with the centrist Democrats 66 party.
De minister-president doet iets vreemds. Die zegt, ik sta voor het recht op demonstratie, maar moet dat nou...
The Prime Minister says he defends the right to demonstrate, but wonders whether it should be done during the season of St. Nicholas. And that's strange, because part of the right to demonstrate is that you can express your feelings about an issue so that people can hear it. And in this case, that's at this time of year, not in, say, July. Otherwise, it would be like demonstrating against a draft law after it's been voted on in Parliament.
The Black Pete debate surfaces each year at this time. Prime Minister Rutte was even asked about it when he once hosted the nuclear security summit. Rutte said the character was harmless.
This is an old children's tradition, Sinterklaas and Zwarte Piet, Black Pete. And it is not Green Pete or Brown Pete, it is Black Pete, so I cannot change that. This is an old tradition and... I can only say that my friends in the Dutch Antilles, they are very happy when they have Sinterklaas because they don't have to paint their faces. And when I'm playing Black Pete, I'm for days trying to get off the stuff on my face.
But critics are not amused and point to history. In 1863, slavery was abolished in the former Dutch colonies of Suriname and the Dutch Antilles after 200 years of the practice. Some foreigners are surprised by the Black Pete debate. American author and comedian David Sedaris has written a story about the tradition called Six to Eight Black Men. He once read it to a group of Dutch students.
This, I think, is the greatest difference between us and the Dutch. While a certain segment of our population might be perfectly happy with the arrangement, if you told the average white American that six to eight nameless black men would be sneaking into his house in the middle of the night, he would barricade the doors and arm himself with whatever he could get his hands on. Six to eight, did you say?
But more often than not, Black Pete is currently sparking debate rather than laughter here in the Netherlands. And for the time being, he's still helping St. Nicholas distribute presents to Dutch children. Stefan Bos, DW, The Hague, The Netherlands.
Well, in case you missed this, it's now official. The United Kingdom will leave the European Union on March 29th next year. And British Prime Minister Theresa May now has less than a fortnight to convince MPs to support her deal outlining UK's future relationship with the EU. British MPs will vote on that Brexit withdrawal text on December 11, but there are fears that May's deal will not pass, which means they could leave the EU with a no-deal Brexit. And that sparked concerns about whether or not there will be a hard border needed between Ireland and Northern Ireland. Sean Defoe reports from Dublin.
I hear a lot of people talking about better deals or alternative deals, and anyone can have a better deal or an alternative deal in their own minds. But an agreement, 500 pages long, that 28 member states can sign up to. Nobody has that. So what's on the table is the only deal that's on the table.
In Brussels last Sunday, the Irish Prime Minister Leo Varadkar was toying the EU line. He insists that the deal on the table between the UK and the EU is the only possible deal that can be worked out. And that's been the message consistently from the Irish government. Ministers have been barred from talking to British media outlets to avoid stirring up trouble in the UK press. But Minister for Foreign Affairs Simon Coveney has had no reservations about airing his views on Irish radio.
Everybody who cares about the island of Ireland, the relationships on it, and who is determined, as I think everybody is, to avoid physical infrastructure re-emerging on the border, would be very foolish to reject the deal that's on the table now that does that job. And I think what all of us need to do now is to try to reassure all parties in Northern Ireland, unionist and nationalist and neither, that this is, in the context of Brexit, as good a deal as it gets for Northern Ireland.
But it isn't entirely in the ruling party's hands. A minority government is in place in Ireland, and recently the Fine Gael party, who are in government with a number of independents, have been hinting they may call an election as their poll numbers climb. One of the arguments in favour is they need a stronger mandate to deal with the Brexit negotiations. The main opposition party is the centre-right Fianna Fáil, and they have a confidence and supply deal keeping this government in place. Its leader, Micheál Martin, says that an election shouldn't happen before Brexit is sorted.
Let's make it clear that notwithstanding the progress of the confidence and supply talks, we should have both agreed not to bring down the government until we know the outcome of Brexit, and that it has been ratified by the British Parliament and indeed the European Parliament. Now, I don't think you can get any fairer than that. And when I met Michel Barnier over a month ago, I mean, they look admiringly at what we are doing here in terms of giving the government space and stability to negotiate Brexit. People looking at Ireland and they say, That is the way a parliament should behave in the midst of a significant threat to the country.
While north of the border, things look even more polarised. In Westminster, Theresa May's government is propped up by the DUP, a Northern Irish party with core unionist values. They fear the Brexit deal will move Northern Ireland further away from the rest of the UK and will sow the seeds for a united Ireland in the future. DUP leader Arlene Foster has threatened to collapse the British government if Parliament backs the deal.
If this is what's coming out, it looks very much like this is what's coming to Parliament, we will not be able to support that deal. If they did decide to back this deal, then obviously we would have to review the confidence and supply agreement.
While Sinn Féin, a staunch Republican party and polar opposites of the DUP, have come under increasing pressure to take their seats in Westminster. Sinn Féin has 7 MPs elected to the DUP's 10, but they operate on an abstentionist policy, refusing to take their seats in Parliament or the Oath of Allegiance. The Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald says there isn't a united view in the Northern Irish executive and they won't be riding in on a white horse to vote in favour of the Brexit deal.
We live and work within the communities in question. So I know full well the necessity and the value of good government and sustainable power sharing. But what I am also saying to you are in cloud cuckoo land, my friend, if you think that there could be an agreed all of executive position on Brexit with the stance that is taken by the DUP. And you are even further in the realms of fantasy and wishful thinking. If you imagine for one second that Ireland or any representatives from Ireland will be the decisive factor in this Brexit, the shape of Brexit.
The Irish government is nervy. Plans are being drawn up for a no-deal Brexit and how the economy will cope with extra tariffs and the fluctuating price of the pound. Ministers have been on a getting business Brexit ready roadshow around the country, but there's still a huge uncertainty because no one actually knows what's going to happen. And until then, all the Irish government can do is watch and wait and hope. Sean Defoe in Dublin.
We now head to France. After days of protests, President Emmanuel Macron addressed the ongoing so-called yellow vest protests that have erupted in the country over fuel hikes. Macron said he could not change course on the controversial fuel tax, but promised a three-month consultation with people around the country on environmental challenges and a mechanism for reining in fuel tax rises when the price of crude oil spikes. John Laurenson has been monitoring the situation in France and sent us this report.
At a roundabout in the northeast of France, yellow vests who've been blocking traffic with their cars and lorries for several days watch their president's speech live on their smartphones.
This isn't what we're asking for. What we want is for him to lower these taxes so it won't be such a struggle for us to make ends meet. So we won't have to work our fingers to the bone for next to nothing.
Frankly, it's always the same thing. The climate. But he doesn't actually say anything.
What he's saying serves no purpose. It's just him blathering on as usual.
Actually, there was, at least, a significant change of tone.
This movement has resulted in large demonstrations and also unacceptable violence. But I distinguish between those who take part in order to bring about destruction and those who want to send a message.
A few days ago, the finance minister called the yellow vests a brown-shirted plague, comparing them to the Nazi SA militia. The interior minister said those who had gone to demonstrate on the Champs-Élysées were the ultra-right. Now the president says he understands the resentments of these hard-working men and women who are just scraping by on low salaries. There would be, however, no change to the government's fuel tax plans. The price of diesel fuel has already increased 23% over the past year. For regular petrol, it's a bit lower. Next January, a 6.5 euro cent per litre tax will be put on diesel, 3 cents on standard unleaded. And these tax hikes will be repeated every year until 2030. As Prime Minister Edouard Philippe explained on BFM TV.
We are not going to cancel the carbon tax. We made a commitment to introduce this tax during the presidential election campaign. Macron made that promise, but all the other candidates promised the same thing at the time, which they seem to have forgotten today. We're bringing in a system which will progressively tax petrol, and therefore carbon, and therefore pollution at higher and higher rates, while lowering taxes on work. This is our objective, and we're proud of it. It is one of the means by which we are going to fight greenhouse gases, CO2, and global warming.
When France, 10 years ago, made it compulsory for motorists to carry fluorescent yellow vests in their cars to wear in case of breakdowns or accidents, little did anyone guess they'd become the uniform and the symbol of a national protest movement. And the Gilets jaunes may be more than a flash-in-the-pan protest fashion statement. Despite the violence and disruption and widespread condemnation in the media, support for the yellow vests is not decreasing. On the contrary, 66% of the French now support them. And new sectors of disgruntled French people are joining all the time. Like this chicken farmer whose chickens were eaten at the Armistice Day commemoration meal at the Élysée Palace a few days ago. The farmer, wearing a yellow vest and filming himself in a video that has had 100,000 hits already, says the president is disconnected with the reality of hard-working French people like himself, 80 hours a week, he says, for 700 euros a month. Mr. Macron, he concludes, you don't deserve to eat my chickens. John Lawrence, DW, Paris.
And that is all we have in today's program of Spotlight on Europe. You can give us your feedback and thoughts on these stories, plus what you'd like to hear from us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. You can also visit our page, dw.com, for more information on these stories. On behalf of the rest of the team, Helen Sini and Lena Hille, I am Zipporah Nyambura. Have a lovely week ahead. I'm for you, be the high.
my mama tell me, cut this.